So really excited to invite Dr. David Lee to our podcast today. David is the president of Ohio Health Plan, and I've gotten to know David over the last few months and gotten a chance to talk with him and learn about his journey. Really excited to have you on to kind of learn about your journey to being a health plan executive, especially as a physician leader. So thanks so much, David, for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Eric. Really excited and appreciate it's been great getting to know you and your team over the last couple months as well.
Awesome. Well, I think first off, I'd love to just kind of get a quick overview about a little about yourself and your role at Hawaii Healthy and kind of how it all came to be that you got into the health plan leadership track.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, maybe I'll start back and just give a little more background about myself, because it's not your usual journey for a physician, I would say. And so born and raised in Canton, Ohio, went to Cornell for undergrad. My parents are from Korea, came over to Milwaukee to study and end up in Canton, Ohio. I have an older brother. So born and raised in Canton, went to undergrad at Cornell. You know, like good Korean parents, one's a lawyer, one's a doctor, right? So after Cornell, I went to OSU, Ohio State, for medical school. And from there, I started to think about what I wanted to do, was in medicine, really enjoyed that piece. And I was thinking about orthopedic surgery, but then family medicine during my rotations, I've noticed that one, they seemed a little happier. And the fact that they had a lot of aspects of just dealing on everyday life of communication skills and some of those things, and knowing just the everyday stuff that occurs in healthcare and medicine. So I went down the family medicine residency route in Columbus at Riverside Hospital. And during that time, I remember, I think it was February, my intern year, and Eric, you probably remember this. I was on OB. So you go in, it's dark, you leave, it's dark, it's Ohio, it's cold. And I was like, man, this is awful. Like, what else can I do? So I started thinking about, man, do I look into applying to be a consultant? I already have my MD. And then I looked at like McKinsey's website and I saw how long the application was and how much writing it was. I was like, okay, I'll just go back to delivering babies for the next of the month. But as I continued my journey and residency, it always intrigued me about, like, I kind of felt like, what else do I want to do? I didn't feel like just being a physician, a practicing physician, was what I wanted to do the rest of my life. So, and then being in family medicine, urgent care was starting to really pick up really at the beginning. So I started doing some urgent care work and I was like, okay, it's kind of shift work. You could do a certain amount of shifts a month and it frees up the rest of your time to do some, maybe some other things in business or entrepreneurial things or just some side things that I wanted to do. So my last year of residency, I was actually chief resident, but I started thinking about, man, what else is there to do? My best friend from college was the CEO of a coffee franchise called Saxby's Coffee, S-A-X-B-Y-S. It was based out of Atlanta, Georgia. And I was thinking about, like, wow, we started talking. I was like, man, maybe it's something I could do and build up, you know, and if it hits, it'd be great. So my wife and I actually bought the Ohio territory and we were going to build it out and be the master of franchisee and kind of be the area developer. But as we were working and talking together, my buddy was like, hey, why don't you move down here? And then we can try to grow this thing together. He was looking for an operations person, COO. And so I graduated residency, took my boards, became family medicine board certified, but moved to Atlanta to be the COO of the coffee franchise. Wow. At the franchisor level. We did that for a year. So a lot of learning. I mean, you know, I did urgent cares on the weekend because I wanted to keep my skills up, but we're a small company trying to grow, you know, and really build it up. And we think we got it to 20 franchises at some point. But then I think time came where the company moved to Philadelphia and I thought we just had our firstborn, probably just go back. You know, I took the entrepreneurial risk. I'll probably go back to just being a clinician. So I did that. So I was working urgent care. And then my neighbor, this is back in the mid 2000s when meaningful use was big. He used to sell EMRs. He just moved in the neighborhood. He's like, yeah, I used to sell EMRs as a practices, but I want to start a business where I'm on the provider physician practice side, helping them navigate, picking the right one, implementation, because I've seen on the other side what happens to these practices where they don't have that help. So he started picking my brain and he liked what I was saying. He's like, hey, why don't you come on board? Let's partner together and build a consulting business. So I did that while I was in Atlanta, still doing urgent care. So I couldn't stay away from some of that just fun entrepreneurial side of things. And so we were building out the business and we were growing. We had some good clients, started getting into back office operations, because once you implement an EMR, it really showcases or highlights, unfortunately, the deficiencies you can have on the practice, because so much is intertwined with the practice management and EMRs. Time came, it was time, we were doing great, but my wife, who's a physician, wanted to finish her residency. She took a little break where we had some children. And so that's where we ended up back in Columbus, Ohio. That's where she landed her residency, where she had to do her second residency or finish up her residency. So it was kind of fun because we moved back to Columbus. We just had our third child. She was redoing her intern year. I was just working urgent care and then the clinically. And we just thought, look, she'll be a hospitalist. She was internal medicine. I'll just be an urgent care doc and we'll move wherever we want. It would be great. Then the opportunity came up at Ohio Health where they were starting the urgent cares back in 2010. And that's where I trained under the hospital under Ohio Health. And I thought, what a great opportunity if opportunity is there to do more of a leadership role. So I applied for the medical directorship and really grew it. So we started, I remember that, I think it was November 10th, 2010. We started with four urgent cares. And from there, just kind of grew into, you know, leading the medical staff, building it up, and then got more operational and then became executive director of portfolio, including the urgent cares and some of the employer work and grew the urgent cares. And that just kind of continued to lead into some other responsibilities. You know, I think we had outpatient therapy for a while. And then in 2015, they started the employer solutions division, really aggregating all the work that they were doing from a B2B standpoint from the health system at Ohio Health and really, really putting the resources behind it. And so I helped grow that and really stabilize that as a division of Ohio Health, which, you know, we're a very hospital-centric system. We have 16 hospitals and, of course, employed physician groups. And this outlier here was a B2B arm. So that was the journey for the last time. And then my boss, a couple of years ago, coming up in May, if you think about Ohio Health and the B2B aspect was really this employer solutions division I was running, which is about 400 people. We work with 11,000 employers across our footprint. And she was saying it makes sense with if we think about some of the integration that could happen with the employers and the work that you're doing clinically and providing employers. And if we have a health plan that we want to get going, you know, it makes sense. So she said, do you want to run the plan? I said, yeah, sure. You know, I was ready for a new challenge. And, you know, you never know where opportunities are. And so it was a great opportunity to get into an industry where I really didn't have much experience. I knew enough to be dangerous just being in healthcare.
Yeah.
And then it was great being able to kind of to grow and really grow the division, the company, set the culture. And that's where we here are today. So I would say from an Ohio Health standpoint, and just to back up, Ohio Health is based in Columbus, Ohio, about $6.5 billion to $7 billion in revenue, 16 hospitals, 35,000 employees, or we call associates. And so I really have two divisions that really are the B2B, the business-to-business arm of the health system between the health plan and our employer solutions, which is kind of that clinical servicing arm of wellness, occupational health, on-site clinic. So that's been a great journey. And if you would ask me 10 years ago, you know, would I be in this space? I probably would have said, absolutely not. I can't imagine how I would get here. But it's just funny how opportunities come up and just being willing to kind of take that chance. So very long-winded answer on my journey.
No, that's awesome. I will say that like we've had more and more talks in my health system about this topic of burnout or all this stuff with physicians. And I think that you kind of touched upon it that as physicians or clinical providers, we've kind of, with this rise in employed healthcare, like we are factory workers, we're widget makers. And if we don't make widgets, we don't get paid. And back in the day when physicians had private practices, it was like their side hustle was building a business, a small business and their own practice, and they're building something of value. And now as employed physicians, we don't really have that same. Now there's a lot of upside with that. There's like job security. You don't have to have a lot of headaches, but you take out that entrepreneurial aspect of day-to-day practice. And so that I'm sure had something to do with looking at the coffee company. With the coffee company, when you told your parents that's what you're going to do after all this medical training, that you're going to go run a one-day hopeful Starbucks, what was the reaction?
It's funny, I probably repressed that memory. I'm sure there was a lot like, what are you doing? Like, if you did all this training and a lot of disbelief and probably disappointment, but it came around. But, you know, I was still practicing clinically on the weekend. But yeah, that was an interesting conversation to have, right, with someone that, especially with all the training and everything. But I think it all goes hand in hand. A lot of the training and the work that you do ultimately are very parallel in terms of, you know, the skill sets to be successful in business too. Back then I said, I thought coffee, retail coffee industry and healthcare were going down the same path. And people kind of looked at me odd, but I think even more so now, 16, 15 years later, I think is absolutely true. You know, the consumerism, like, you know, you want to be efficient. You got to know your name. You got to create that relationship in a very short period of time and have the trust. And you want the same quality drink across wherever you go. Right.
Yeah.
That's why a lot of people always go to Starbucks, right? You know what you're going to get if you're in LA or Chicago or New York. You go to the mom and pops, you never know what you might get, even though it may be better, you might have a miss here or there. So
And I think if you look at where Starbucks is, right, that rebirth of the name on the cups, the destination, the experience, rather than being a transactional buy coffee, leave, go come back. And the other thing that you touched upon was keeping that hand in clinical care. So when we started Proterra, there was a lot of question of like, should the founders, which are all, were all surgeons, should we give up clinical care? And we had a very strong opinion that we should not. We should at least have some continued clinical care. Not only because it helped us do our business better, but like you really can't come back into it afterwards. If you leave it, it's very hard to come back and you lose touch with, if you're in healthcare, at the end of the day, we are providing health to patients. It doesn't matter what part of that chain you're on. So if you lose that, then you lose your perspective on how to deliver care. And it's fine if you like never actually went to medical school and you never had that perspective, but to have it and then lose it, it can affect things. And I imagine as you progress through the plan, the system side, having that continued clinical presence has probably shaped in some way how you approach things.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. I've had this debate with other physician leaders and clinicians when they get to that point of like, they're so administrative or operational. It's like, at some point, can you continue your practice? And just being honest, I think it comes down to, why are you doing this? Is this for your own? You know, are you doing it for you? Because in your mindset, that's what you need to do to stay grounded and to stay, have that clinical presence. Because I would debate at times, you know, if you're running an organization of hundreds and hundreds of people with multiple sites, you know, that half day you're doing in the clinic, is that benefiting them as opposed to maybe doing site visits or thinking strategically? Yep. And so that debate really is there. And I've had that discussion with a lot of physician leaders on, you know, where is that tipping point? I don't practice anymore. I still am board certified and keep up everything, but it's been some period of time since I've seen patients. I'll say I probably see more patients, like unfortunately on vacations or on airplanes, like when they're like, they need a doc or something like that, which is always fun to kind of like, oh my goodness. So I was like, should I tell them my role or should I just...
And I think the other distinction you made just now is that how you're not seeing patients now, I think if you look at the journey from pure clinician to pure administrative leader, at some point there is a break even, right? Where you've done your building and your formation. Now you've got to shift focus on that administrative leadership task. So I do agree with you that it does. And if you look at a lot of the folks like our mentors that have scaled back to clinical to almost zero, but administrative is high, it was often a gradual transition as you just got more and more ingrained in the work you're doing. So I see that point absolutely as well. And that might be in the cards for me down the future, but we're still very much in building mode. So it's a little different from that perspective.
And there's no right. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer. It's what makes sense to you and your team and how it's structured, right? For me, I just have a couple of divisions, and especially being in a young, maturing company, we want to make sure that I'm giving it attention.
And, you know, your path, I'm sure, is very common where doors are opening and you went to Ohio Health for many reasons, but coming as a leadership role, I would imagine that you may not have known what doors would end up opening, but that there were doors there. I think how much did that drive your decision to go to Ohio Health versus a smaller urgent care from the clinical job?
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think part of it is you want to set yourself up for success. And, you know, I think that's so true, at least in Ohio Health, my experience has been, and I don't have many others other than working clinically in different practices. But at Ohio Health, they very are physician-centric in terms of they really respect that physician leadership role and they're a trusted partner, even the independent physicians that work at the care sites in the hospital. So I think that is important to make sure that you're going into a spot where there is not only doors open, but there's a path of just that respect of knowing what the physician leaders can bring to the table. Of course, you know, it's always funny because then I'm sure you hear that from physicians, they hear you're doing some other things and they're like, yeah, I just need to do that. I'll just move and I was like, yeah, sure. You know, if you can do it, I mean, it is a skill set and there is a lot of learning in it, just like any other role and different stressors, I say, because I get it. My wife was a practicing physician. And so I know there's stressors, but being in this administrative operation role, there's different stressors. You know, you're really trying to drive the strategy and the success of a division for, you know, 400,000 or 500,000, whatever your division is, you know, they're really looking to keep them successful.
Yeah. And you bring up a good point as well. Like, so if you look at, I'm about like 9-10 years in practice, that first 3 years of practice, the stress was on the actual practice of medicine, the practice of orthopedic surgery and making sure it was, but after those become more rote, you start thinking about what are you doing from a building perspective? Even if you're like 100% clinical, it's okay. How do you maximize that productivity? How do you minimize your own burnout? How do you maximize efficiency in the clinic? And you're building. And so a lot of us want to keep building and innovating and you have to just do it within the scope. But yeah, I mean, it is different, right? Going through those stressors of being administrative versus clinical. It's a whole different set, but it's the amount of stress, I think, is probably still there. And it's more a reflection of you as a person, how much you want to take on.
Yeah. Well, and I always tell our medical staff that work in our division is like, you know, as physicians, when you're in the clinic, you know, you are the leader. You think about the things that you have to do in terms of leading the clinical staff, setting the culture. I call it the microculture at their practice. There's the department culture, the division culture, system culture. You know, these are all culture that can be built, and it's really, really based on the leadership. And so I think as the physicians and clinicians, when they're in that role, have a great opportunity to build that foundation of what they want to have that culture. And even the space of whether it's a team of four or five or a team of 400, you know, I think those are inherent skill sets that transfer over.
And speaking of, on that point on leadership, so both of us got our MBAs. I don't know what your experience was. I went to a very good business school, but I wouldn't say that our leadership classes, part of it's because it's been a long time, right, since I did it, but I wouldn't say that it was a real practical guide on how to lead and manage, right? How do you manage work and manage who gets what done by when? So for your leadership, for your direct reports, first of all, let know how many direct reports you have, but for your direct reports and organization at large, where did those leadership skills come in? How did you develop them and who helped you develop them? It was from business school.
No. Yeah, great question. So right now in my employer solutions division, I have a senior medical director and a senior director of operations that really run the division on that side. And similar on the plan side, I have our compliance officer, but also our COO, our CMO, and our VP of sales that report up. So they kind of run the division. And over the years, you have to be aware, you have to start taking it in at every point you can. So leadership is seen at all levels in every different area. I always think about the leaders that I've worked for, and you just got to replicate the good and the bad. Every meeting you're in, I'm like, okay, how did that go? Were they able to influence? How did they react? You take the good and bad, and you got to find your own, kind of find your own brand in a sense, because when people say, I want to emulate and just be like that, I was like, it can never be just like that person. You got to take that in and kind of find your own brand. So that's been every opportunity I can go back through the leaders that I have had. I have a great leader that I work for now, and there are ones in the past, I have good ones, and I learned from them both the good things and the bad things, things I probably would do differently, and think about that and put that and tuck that away and back my brain and think about, okay, if I'm in that situation, if I'm in that role, I'll do it this way and not that way. So you don't go on that rut. Turning to the MBA, I got mine, I would say, I think mine I did over 3 years from 2017 to 2019. So at that point, I was already in the crux of operational leadership. So it was kind of hard. It was one of those things I felt like I should do. And there was some great learning, some great nomenclature, almost doing for me, I was living it, but I kind of got the textbook of the structure of things I were doing. But now you could kind of talk about it more in a structural way that maybe correlates. I know some of the other physician executives that I know that went through that maybe were on the verge of it, not necessarily fully operational, felt like they could speak the language a little better and really understand that. But I would say from a leadership standpoint, I don't know how there's great books and you learn, but you got to live it and experience it. And you learn from your failures, right? But I think you can learn leadership in every aspect. I mean, you know, I think in one of our classes, we had to watch the movie Miracle on Ice and talk about all these leadership attributes and the different kind of nomenclatures of what aspect. So you could classify it and bucket it as opposed to like, yeah, that was good leader right there. And that was good leadership. Now you could kind of define it, you know, per a textbook, I would say. So yeah, always learning. And I think it's one of those that people say, yeah, I don't think I can learn from everyone. I was like, oh, I don't know. We're always learning, you know, you can always be better and no one's ever going to be perfect. So we're just always on that journey. But I would say just everyone, I learned from my team members, you know, the way they lead their teams and the feedback they give to me. And then, of course, I learned just from all the other leaders that I deal with in the organization.
What about things like hiring, firing, putting people on PIPs? As physicians, I mean, if you look at most big health system physician groups, right, physicians actually don't have direct reports. It's usually all the work is overseen a lot of times by administrative management, administrative leadership, nursing leadership. So a lot of the nursing leaders actually have many direct reports under them, MAs and other nurses and other staff. And then you have operations, but the physicians typically do not have direct report, at least in the employed model. And so how do physicians learn? Because we had to learn this too at building a company. Like, how do physicians learn how to hire and fire? Because this is never touched upon even in practice for us.
Well, that just took time and I would say great support. You know, I'm fortunate enough, our HR team, our talent acquisition team that I've worked with over the years have been great support and I've learned a ton from them, but it's been great because they're alongside. I mean, for you, you know, in your entrepreneurial mode, like, how do you know how to do a PIP to not put yourself at risk? Are you doing it the right way? Are you doing it the right time? And I feel fortunate of being in a system where there was that support there that I can lean on. Now, ultimately, you have to deliver the message and you have to actually do it in the execution of it, which is something a little different. But that was something challenging. I would say for me, one of my opportunities as I've grown as a leader is that crucial conversations are really heading on with confrontation with some of those. You know, I've had to let go of positions, and we've had as a team, you know, make some hard decisions on roles, and it's never easy. But I think there are a couple of things when you come to those decisions. It's, you know, the what is the what? And I think from a business aspect, if it's a sound business decision, everyone can get behind it. But I think the big things that people remember is how it was communicated. And I think more importantly, and especially as you have your structure and your growth, is how was the communication and who knew about it by when? Because they'll forget about necessarily what happened, but they'll remember like, man, I wasn't told that. And they'll remember that. And that causes some distrust. Yeah. So I think the what, we like to separate the what and how at our organization. And I think the how is so important, right? Decisions are going to be made. There's going to be tough decisions. And hopefully they're objectively and business biased, but then business based. And then it's going to be about how are we going to deliver it? How are we going to communicate it? How do we make sure that we're keeping the value of that person, and that you can go home and sleep at night with the integrity of yourself and know that you did everything you could the right way.
And going along that as well, like we think about like trust and respect and integrity. So venturing into a couple of these sensitive topics here, I feel like a pretty comprehensive view of health plans and health plan leaders. We work with health plans. Our system has a health plan, and I have a lot of admiration for a lot of the leaders I've worked with. And there's a general feeling of, yes, we need to deliver good. We need to deliver value. We need to make people better. We have to be mindful of costs. And, you know, there's a lot of backlash now on, and there's always been with physician leaders in healthcare and health plans. How do you approach that where there is some level of kind of sentiment about, you know, health plans being the quote unquote, the bad guys, and being a leader in that plan, and you have your peers, and I'm sure sometimes they may be open with you, sometimes they may not be, but like, how do you handle that juxtaposition of being a physician leader at a health plan with some of that baggage that comes of being a health plan just by nature of the business? How do you reconcile that? What advice do you have for others that are thinking about that as they progress their career path into health plan leadership?
Great question, right? You're a suit now, right? You get that coat. Like, that's what happens for those that may not be aware. Like if a physician becomes on the administrative side, like, oh, they're a suit now. Yeah. You know, you gave up your scrubs and your white coat for the suit. Yeah. And then you double that with I'm on a health plan, which is a very low confidence rate. And so I think the way I've approached it is just, you know, you got to be authentic and have integrity. And it's a tough role. I think the fortunate thing we have is being a provider-based plan that's owned by Ohio Health. We can go back to the mission of our system, which is to improve the health of those we serve. So one of our messages is like, you know, who do we answer to? We answer to our patients and our members. We don't have to answer to Wall Street or shareholders, because Ohio Health is a not-for-profit system that's really trying to better the care and give good quality care and better the community. So that helps us with a different message that we can say, look, we want to do the right thing. And if we can always go back to, let's make sure we put the patient and member at the center of everything we do, it should work itself out. Things happen, there's miscues and there's tough decisions, but I think fundamentally, if we can do that, that helps, because I think you got to sleep at night and you want to make sure that you're doing the right things and giving the right mission for your team and what we're trying to do. But that's a great question. It is challenging. I'd say, you know, it helps that if you have the relationships, and we're big on relationships, if you can have those relationships with the key leaders that understand where you're coming from and that you have good intent. And I share that with my team a lot, like things can happen, but you got to remember, where is their intent? If everyone has good intent and what we're trying to do, it puts a different spin if you're like, they did that because they wanted to do X, as opposed to they're trying to do the right thing, but it just went a little sideways and we're trying to get it back on track. But that is something. And I think it's getting better, at least from my angle, or maybe they just don't talk to me and just talk behind my back. So I don't know.
Or on Twitter. /X. And then, you know, heading into one more of the sensitive topics around this utilization management prior auth. Now, when I have my surgeon hat on, now, I work at a health system where we have residents and fellows, and it's really hard to do unindicated surgeries by and large because people are going to see it. Yeah. And if you have a complication, it goes to M&M, and they're going to first ask you about the indications, and you have peers and colleagues that look at the schedule, seeing everything. So we tend to see that there isn't a lot of unindicated surgery, at least in our practice. But, you know, the topic of UM and prior auth is huge right now, given all the recent current events. And, and I think there's a place for it. But I think that it also is not a cure-all. That's my personal thought. And when you blanket use it, there are some bad things that can happen from a friction perspective. But how do you approach this topic, UM? Just what are your thoughts on, like, what message do you want to give to those listening about what the role is or how you think it does play in, if it does, and how we should approach it from a going forwards perspective, not looking back?
Yeah. And I think you said it right. Like, you know, I think the majority of people have the right intent. Are there some people that are outliers in terms of standard of care and doing what's right? Maybe. But I think from our end, because we're a provider-based plan, we want to do what's right for the patient. So I think we take that in. And first thing foremost, we always go back to if there is some discrepancy, like, let's do what's right for the patient and the member. And then let's figure that on the back end. It is necessary. I mean, there is a lot of waste in healthcare, however you want to define it, but we know we can do better. Is this one, I guess, tactic that can help with that? It's not the end all, to your point, blanket stop, but I do think it's a tactic. And is it? And I think as we get more into technology and leveraging technology and different things, AI is getting big, like how can that help just sort things out? You know, I think the goal of it was, in my head, this is my story. I think the goal of it was just to make sure checks and balances, we're doing what's right for the patient, standard of care, making sure the surgery is appropriate, as opposed to now it's got this feel of it's a cost-saving measure. It's because you don't want to pay. And I think if we can steer it back to what I think was the original intent, if I think about utilization management, and again, the nice thing is I can be naive because I'm new to the health plan space over the last couple of years. That's the way I would view it is, I think we just want to do what's right for the patient and not do an unintended harm for things that don't need to be done. Sure, cost is a byproduct, but it shouldn't be the driving force. But I think we've probably gone so far in society on that piece. It's going to take some time to dial it back. So that's a way we view it is like, look, we do what's right for the patient and member. If we start with that, things usually work itself out in one way or another.
And, you know, we had some conversations recently on the clinical side of things where you're seeing online too, where the peer reviewers who are being tasked with trying to figure out appropriateness, like sometimes they are clinicians in the field of care. Like, let's say I have to do a peer-to-peer for a meniscus surgery because I'm a sports medicine doc. If I'm talking to another sports medicine surgeon, there's a level of, okay, we can talk the same language. Sometimes it's not a specialist. Sometimes it's a non-orthopedic surgeon. And what we're seeing online is that there's this backlash of surgeon to these prior auth peer-to-peers and surgeons are asking for names and contact information, and they're putting in the record saying, okay, if you're denying the surgery, I'm putting your name that you're saying is denying surgery. And it gets to this topic of like, is the UM process, are they practicing medicine by dictating what the procedure is? So I don't know if you have any comments on that, but there's a lot of backlash that's brewing from a groundswell.
Yeah, and it's tough because, I mean, there's standard of care guidelines, and this gets, I mean, I would pose a question to you as a surgeon. There's probably criteria that meet surgery. And if it's denied, is it documentation? Not like what? Where is the missing piece? Is it because, I mean, if you hit all those and it's denied, then that seems like an issue. I would say, you know, components of it, of documentation, or did you do some standard of care guidelines? But medicine is always a balance between art and science too. So how much leeway do you give the providers? And I don't know if there's a right answer.
It's a tough one.
Yeah. So that one is tough. And there is a lot of backlash and a lot of concern, especially over things that have been in the media over the last year of what's happened. So I don't know if that's going to be solved anytime soon, but hopefully it gets better towards the right way of trying to give more, I think, you know, autonomy to the providers and making sure they take care of the patients.
And, you know, veering a little bit into politics, Ohio Healthy, from what I understand, is not predominantly in the government lines like Medicare or Medicaid, but are you all still impacted by kind of the back and forth in DC on policies that may come and go, or are you guys spared for the time being? How are you looking at all these changes that are potentially coming, they're getting reversed and coming in, funding, all this stuff?
No, that's a great question. I think, so as I run the health plan, the other division I run is part of the health system on the provider side. So that's always impacting the provider system on what's happening at the government, at the federal level. So it is something for us to keep aware of, because a lot of times what happens is whatever happens at the federal level, at the Medicare, Medicaid level, you know, will trickle down into the commercial space where we're a TPA, where we have products for large and small employers. So we are aware of it because it's like, yeah, if they're going that route, that seems to be the trailblazer of what's going to come down the line. So we have to be aware. I think we'd be silly to put our head in the sand and just pretend like we're isolated because we don't offer those products. I think we have to know what's going on. And especially from the system side, it impacts the way they view things too as well. So it is something that we're keeping up always, you know, the Becker's emails and all these things. And we're part of the ACHP, and just getting that information is always helpful for us to kind of gauge on where we at, you know, in terms of the dynamics. And it's fluid, right? I'm sure you can change day to day with things happening, and we just kind of take it in and figure out where's our path. Does that change our path? Does it affect us? And just keeping aware of things because we won't be immune to it. We may, I think short term, maybe we are, but eventually I think it'll all come down now.
So you're the president of this plan, and I know when you recount how you got there. It was a little bit of kind of, you know, doors opening and figuring out which one to take. And sometimes it led to something that worked and then it came back. If you're talking to a young clinician who wants to be in your shoes one day, and let's say they're just practicing clinician in an employed model, whether large or small, and they say, David, you know, I want to be a health plan president one day or a CMO one day. What advice would you give them on tactical steps and next steps or opportunities? How would you guide them on what they should do to get that path?
I think you have to get involved, right? The opportunities, you got to raise your hand. I think we've seen a trend where it's like, I'll raise my hand, but it's almost like, I'll do this, but I need this in return. I think when I was, it was like, you raise your hand, you just get the experience and you show that you can do the extra work. And what we like to say is stretch assignments. Like, what things can you prove outside of what you're doing now? I think raising your hand, making sure that you're learning and open for opportunities that you aren't comfortable with. I think that's big too. I think, you know, being in spaces where you learn can show a lot of people that, hey, you took something that was new, that was maybe you weren't comfortable with and you were able to succeed at it. I think also building relationships, learning from others, like, are you connecting with some of the leaders that you just let them know where you want to go? And then usually if they're leaders, the way I view it is like, they usually are going to be ones that say, how can I help get you there? I always say development is always your responsibility. You know, as a leader, I'm there to grow leaders, but the development's got to be their responsibility. I think we're there to make sure there's resources. I think good leaders are always looking to grow new leaders, right? I always think of, and when I talk about leadership, like Bill Parcells, and you think about all his assistant coaches. And to me, when they became head coaches, that's the tree. That's what you want, right? I love seeing my team when they elevate either internally or even externally. They found a great opportunity, but it's an elevation where they could grow and use the skill set. So I think you want to attach yourself to make those relationships with leaders who will help you grow, maybe open some doors or at least give you some insights. I think you got to be honest with yourself and really know where your opportunities are, where your strengths and where your opportunities or challenges and what you need to work on too. Because I think as physicians, we want to be right. We're the go-to person, right? We have to be, but you have to kind of get outside of that and kind of become a little more humbled in terms of like, what do I need to learn? What do I need to do? Where's the opportunity there? Because you have to be able to connect with people in an authentic way and have that relationship. And if you just come heavy top down, it's hard, right? Because you got to create that trust, and trust is that two-way street of, you got to give someone, be vulnerable, and then they'll trust you, and inherently, you know, you can get them to where they need to go. So kind of long-winded answer. So just breaking it down, I think get involved, you know, raise your hand if there's committees, different things, reach out to different leaders, let them know what you want to do. And hopefully they'll say, hey, how can I help you? And maybe they'll connect you to other leaders. It's that tree of networking relationships. And then I think the advanced degree, like an MBA, can be beneficial. I think it just depends on the situation and how the health system is. I think for us, a lot of times internally, it was like, you don't need it if you're internally, your work is your work. Yeah. Looking externally, maybe it is there. So I think that's just the conversation and knowing where you are in your career path and where you're, what your, how your employer values it or doesn't value it in your current role. But those are things that come to mind. I think, you know, though, a lot of it is, you got to be proactive, right? All those things are that person going out, you know, for you to sit back. And I tell my kids this, you can't just sit back and people aren't going to come to you. You got to go get it and you got to work at it. So similar thing, right? Just like you, I'm sure.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the point that you touched upon is that, like, and we wrote about this in a recent post, is that people, how they want to get started in vibe-based care is you've got to go do something. And you mentioned this earlier, right? Like, if you do something only if you get paid to do it, well, what was the, you're benefiting by learning by doing it, right? So you actually should not need revenue or salary if you're doing something like a project, right? No one's saying go work for free, but if there's a committee or a project to take on that'll maybe take a little bit of time after work, well, you're going to learn how to do it, right? That's your investment of your time. And I don't want to say people don't embrace that as much, but I do think that our jobs as physicians have become more transactional. I get paid for every RVU I produce or whatever RVU I work or whatever. Yeah. And so I think we're losing track of the mentality of like, get work done, doesn't matter about the pay, because it does at the end of the day. Like that. So I think you have to break that mold if you're going to learn, because you have to assume that the education is the payment. So my side perspective on that.
Yeah, you're right on. Absolutely.
So last question for you. So as you reflect back on your career to date, what are you most proud of and what are you most excited of for the next steps?
I think what I'm proud is of the culture that we built within our divisions and the leaders that we've produced that have gone on to either get promoted within and or gone to promotions outside of our organization. It's always tough for when people leave, but I've always been the mindset, you got to do what's best for you and your family. If it's with us, great, but there's only so many positions. And so if it's outside, understand it. So when I see them and I keep in touch and you see their rise, That means you've had a hand in their development and their journey. What I'm most excited about, again, from a plant side, is we have the opportunity to really grow as a provider-based system in the Central Ohio. We got the right leadership. We have the right leaders on board. We're getting more mature in terms of what we're offering and what we're operating. And so really excited about, you know, as a new company coming in the market, we had to get over that hump of being new. You know, we're getting good feedback from the brokers that we're in the market. We're a name, you know, and so we're getting past that. Now it's like we just continue to close deal. And I feel like it's going to be a snowball. Once we get some more wins every year, it'll just continue to go on. So to be able to have an impact in the community and offer a product that's a little different in a space that's really, I think, owned by a handful of players is really exciting from my standpoint to be able to have a hand in it. And so just seeing that kind of product and that division come and grow similar to our employer solutions division, what we did 10 years ago, is really exciting and gets me going. But it's ultimately, I love the people I work with and the culture that we create are really what gets me going.
Awesome. Going back to the theme of building as we close up. Thank you so much, David. I really appreciate you having us on and hope you have a great day.
Thank you so much, Eric. Appreciate it. Anytime.